This is a production of Cornell University.
Today is Wednesday, May 2nd, meeting of the Employee Assembly. It's 12:24 p.m. Are there any late additions to the agenda?
Yes, the Ed Committee results, survey results.
Okay. And Gemma?
Terrifying.
All right. Okay, so moving quickly on to the minutes, does anybody have any additions, changes, corrections for the meeting minutes?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Great, thank you. Okay, moving right into the business of the day, just to give a little update on the academic calendar. Leslie, did you want me to share or did you want to share? Or?
Either way, fine. So, the Academic Calendar Committee has been complicated, but one of the things that happened is originally the committee was going to include in its resolution to the Faculty Senate the two staff holidays that they had proposed. That has been removed as part of the resolution, but it is still in their recommendation. So there's a, if you look on the Faculty Senate website or the beginning of the faculty's website, I guess, there's a document called Rationale for Key Changes to Cornell's Academic Calendar. It is still in the process of being revised because the students are not happy with the proposal that has been created. And we have to have it finished by very soon in order to get it onto the agenda for the next Faculty Senate meeting so that they can vote on it. But here's what the this document that's on the, among the recommendations reads about staff holidays. Although not directly part of the committee's charge, the issue of staff holidays was discussed. Staff have no holidays between New Year's Day and Memorial Day, and many staff volunteer to work at commencement on Memorial Day weekend, in which case they have no holiday until July 4th. The recognition of Martin Luther King Jr. Day and the creation of the two-day President's Day break provide the university with an opportunity to address this issue, which is of great concern to the staff, as noted in the Employee Assembly resolution supporting the recommendations of this committee. They want to make sure that our support of their recommendations is still there, even though the resolution is not going to stay staff holidays. So they've asked us, they asked me to bring it back to this group.
So thoughts on that? We passed a resolution up to David Scorton that said we support particularly the holidays. Do people have thoughts? Would we not support the change to the academic calendar if they said there's no staff holidays?
So we would have to work those days?
Yes, we would have to work those days.
We already
work them. It would just be a question of would we, if they decided not to give us those days off that we already work, instead of giving us those days off, would we still support the other changes to the calendar? Is that a no?
I would not support the current suggestion that we don't get 5 months without a day off, essentially. I don't know about everybody else, but April in particular for me is I don't get a day off from essentially the end of spring break until now. This past weekend was the first time I've had an opportunity to take time off, working 65 to 70 hour weeks. So in order to I can't support something that doesn't give me time off between the new year and the end of May.
But you already don't have that.
I don't currently have an opportunity to say I need a day off between the end of March and May.
So are you, just in specific to your, so are you working 7 days a week? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So that is an issue that you should be addressing with your supervisor because that isn't supposed to be happening. You're supposed to be balancing your time and you should be taking, if you're working Saturday, Sunday, you should be taking other days off in the week.
My supervisor is unsympathetic to that situation.
Then you need to go above.
I'm going to.
Yeah, you should because that's the issue.
The only thing I was going to say is, right now, as a university, we're changing the calendar, and we're looking at things. And I just think that they're just taking away and not giving a voice to employees. And I think since students have concerns with it, I'm not necessarily, and then we have concerns because they're saying we're not going to get any holidays. I think this is the one time where we can voice our objection. And I just don't think that I'm not going to support a revision of an academic calendar that's not going to be inclusive to the needs of the staff. I mean, if it's only catering to that of faculty. And if students are voicing concerns, I think we have just as much as we have to voice concerns about what about the needs of the staff members given this long period of time. And I think those are just two holidays we should have off naturally. I mean, they're kind of like the right things to do, and I think we should.
So, David, you had?
Couple of things. Why was it removed? Can it be put back in, and should we just draft it on the
It will not be put back in. The provost and the dean of the faculty have said that it is beyond the purview of the academic council. Because it's going through the faculty senate, so it's not a staff issue.
And they don't make budgetary decisions.
So that's
something. Now, so my other question is, if we were to get one day, but not both days, do we support?
Yeah, that's a compromise.
Okay. Bridget and Beth and I met with Mary, and we talked about this a little bit, and she's working on the staff piece of it, and her sense was that Martin Luther King Day was under consideration. She wasn't sure about President's Day. She's pushing for Martin Luther King Day.
And perhaps a flexible...
And then perhaps a flexible floating holiday that you could take...
But it's a holiday.
A holiday. So you'd have to be a holiday. Curtis?
So the question what I heard was do we still support this resolution on the revised academic change? If their response is that staff holidays are not in the purview, then why are we in the purview in the dialogue that you need our support in order for this motion to have support? So my response would be, since we're not in the purview, then no, we don't support on our
right.
purview issues.
I'm just thinking, so what I'm thinking about is the fact that we would need to draft another resolution stating that with the removal of the staff holiday component of the resolution, we do not support it. But I'm wondering if there is something that we would put in there to say, you know, we would, you know, there are other components to that we would be in support of, like if we got one of the 2 days, if we got a floating holiday, something like that. I don't want to kind of throw us out. I still want to say, you know, time off is important to us for this variety of reasons. And what is it that...
I don't think we should do an option. But I agree.
I have a question. So we passed the resolution. We went to the president.
Yep.
What does us passing that resolution... I mean, it's already gone to the president. Have we not already voiced our opinion and our concern?
We've voiced...
And even though this... is not going to be included in the recommendation to the Senate. I'm just trying to figure out how that affects how we support or don't support it.
Well, and essentially the resolution that we passed, if I remember correctly, is a resolution about, we supported
the proposed changes to the calendar.
Well, but it's specifically about...
It says specifically
about
staff holidays.
Okay.
It's not really a broad
support of the changes. Okay.
Right. So the question is, you know, do we write something to President Sporton saying, you know, we understand this is removed from the recommendation, and the staff feel very strongly that consideration, and that whomever should be taking that under consideration, this should be going forward to them, whether it's Mary, whether it's some other component.
Yes.
Okay. I will talk with Mary and ask her if that should go to her along with David or whom, and we'll put something together, and I'll bring it to the next EA meeting.
So then the question for me is, how do I respond back to the calendar committee? Because their question was, do we still support the calendar changes?
No longer what we supported.
What else in the calendar changes would be beneficial to staff?
Or not.
Yeah. Or, yeah, either way. because we're the voice of the staff.
I understand that.
Which part of their changes would staff care about?
I'm not sure that I'm not sure that I can answer your question specifically about benefits to staff, because the purpose of the changes is not about staff. The reason that the committee was put together was to address student stress. The conversation about staff holidays was an extra that happened within the context. It emerged through the faculty. I didn't bring it up. But it was not something that was a part of the original purpose of that committee. The changes for the fall are minimal. The fall will look very much like it does now, except that the students will have all day Wednesday before they come off instead of a half day, and the exam schedule is changing. Beyond that, there's no perceptible change to the fall. In the spring, there is a proposal to have the first 2 days of President's Week off for classes, and to move spring break a little bit later in the semester. So that there's a bit of a balance of when the breaks happen. And the start date of the semester has to do with when Martin Luther King Day is. The biggest concern, and Bridget, I bring it up every time, about the end of the semester in the spring is what is the last day of exams, and how does that bump up against the Friday before graduation, because staff have to clean the building and get them ready for
And that's a big issue for staff.
That's right.
And also for, I would probably imagine, for folks who act as registrars and whatnot for final grades and that sort of thing.
So
that, I think, is the biggest staff, those are the biggest staff pieces.
Yep.
Other than that, when they start classes or when they finish classes, I don't think affect us in general.
So then the students don't get any time off for President's Day right now?
No.
No.
So then faculty will have those 2 days off?
Well, they won't be teaching.
Yes, they won't. That distinction is made clear. They won't be teaching.
That doesn't mean that it's a day off necessarily.
Yeah.
Not teaching, but they may be in their office.
They may be in their office. They may be doing research. They may be doing whatever. They're just not having to teach classes on those days. Because I said the same thing in that.
Can we develop a term instead? We're not working, but we're not working. So where are we going?
Yeah. Here's my question. If there was never any mention of staff holidays in the academic calendar proposal that came forward, there was never anything in there from the get-go, would we have supported the calendar or not?
What don't students like about it? They don't like that senior week is being shortened, and they want to have an additional break in the middle of exams.
And we
want to
support students.
So that's already, we're already working on that part. So the final proposal will be different from what it is now because we've already made a few changes. The students are still not happy. We're still trying to negotiate that.
Are they making any modifications to the end of the spring semester thing that would affect the staff?
What do you mean?
Well, as far as Bridget's concerns in that, and I don't think...
Senior week for my constituents is a huge piece of what they do.
Yep.
And they were quite excited to see that it was cut down to only 3 days. To add that back into a long stretch of time is a stressor for them.
Yep.
And does not alleviate.
Agreed.
So I can't support it if they have that in their area.
I don't. Susan Murphy's been very clear that having a shorter senior week is one of her priorities. So I'm pretty confident that that's not going to change,
okay.
That it will remain shorter. But that complicates the issue with residential programs and how they
can. Do we have any time to talk about this? Or
not really, unfortunately, because we have to have the... I mean, we could say we can't give you a response, but we could do that.
Curtis, did you?
So I guess my question is, when looking at the staff engagement survey, one of the things that came up was that staff overall feel like they're doing a lot more with less, and there's a higher level of stress among staff.
Okay.
I mean, that was clear. So when looking at this academic calendar, their only concern and lens is that of student stress, and they're not looking at staff stress and how that calendar plays out. I just think the whole premise of it is flawed. And that's why I don't think we should support it, because we weren't a constituent in the whole planning process, but then you're asking us to support a document where we weren't a part of the process.
And they initially did not, I mean, we didn't have to send anything forward about the academic calendar. So, I mean, I think we can do one of two things. You know, this is specifically tied to the academic calendar, which does not necessarily define the staff calendar. So is there something that we need to put to Mary Opperman saying, absent of the staff calendar, absent of the academic calendar, we are looking at the staff calendar, and there needs to be a break in here for the mental health of the staff. And there needs to be a group devised to look at that and what that should be.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I like that.
So we could do that. And I think, you know, if we're sitting there and saying that the changes to the academic, if the staff dates were never in the academic calendar proposal, if they were never in that proposal, if we supported the calendar, then I think we can say that we would still support that calendar, but also say we're, you know, we feel very strongly about this issue and we need there to be some attention put to staff holidays, staff mental health, something like that. I mean, they can pass the calendar and remove parts of it, I believe. So the calendar could still pass with or without our support, without the staff holidays. But I think there's an opportunity here for us to push forward and say, just because you dropped it over here doesn't mean we're dropping it over here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Is there a motion in there someplace?
So sure. So I will say I make a motion that we support the academic calendar, the changes to the academic calendar, with the language in there, the recommendation of the staff holidays, and that we do a follow-up resolution specific to the fact that this was removed from the resolution. The EA is taking this up, and we want our own resolution to support staff holiday during this period of time.
Okay, second time.
All in favor? Great. I will put something together. I will try to get it.
Two people opposed.
I'm sorry. Opposed, opposed? Okay.
Opposed.
Can you write down what you said or have somebody send that?
Did you type that? No?
Tanya recommended it be covered outside and then like an outside resolution. Connect to the
campus. So that...
I wrote, we support changes
to the academic calendar
with the recommendation of staff holidays.
Included in it. And that the EA will be creating a secondary resolution that there needs to be some committee formed or whatever to continue to review. What they currently have in the resolution now, right, Leslie? Is staff holidays, although
no, it's not in the resolution.
It's in, but what is it in?
It's in the document that describes, it's called the rationale for key changes to Cornell's academic calendar, which describes the changes and how they were developed, how they came about. And it is, it's at the end of the section about spring semester. It is not part of the resolution that will go to the Faculty Senate. The Faculty Senate wouldn't have considered it anyway. They don't...
That is not within their purview.
But the purpose of the university is academics, and
correct.
Staff support those academics. So I find it kind of like a scapegoat to say, oh, we don't deal with staff issues.
It is.
Well, we don't deal with faculty issues.
Well, somebody has to own the calendar of the university, whether we call it the academic calendar or whatever.
And it was assigned to the faculty. That job was assigned to the
faculty. Right.
Then they need to account for all constituents.
Right, but they can't make a recommendation of approving a holiday that may cost the university money.
Why make their recommendations?
It's an academic calendar.
Right, and they're recommending.
That's right. It's an academic calendar. That's what it is. The committee to send forth a proposal to make changes to the academic
But whatever they do with academic affects staff.
Sure it does.
So it, I don't see it that clearly, and I'd almost like to withdraw my support for
okay.
the resolution.
So, do we need to revote?
I'm now confused. Because I had it, and then I lost it. Because if you're writing in support of the resolution with the holidays, when the resolution doesn't actually mention the holidays, how are you?
Okay.
You're right.
This is the most heated the EA's been all year. Okay.
Well, I do, you know, now that we're thinking about it, I do, you know, somebody in the university calendar decided that the faculty should have Labor Day off, so why can't they just, you know, why can't they do it for the staff, you know? So it's kind of like somebody decided that.
It
wasn't the employee assembly that decided the faculty should have the day off.
Who
so
did decide that? The faculty did?
The recommendation came from IOR.
And that was approved by the faculty senate.
But that's a faculty issue. It went through the faculty.
So given that, is the EA the body that should have advanced the staff holiday?
Absolutely.
And, but then who would be... If the Faculty Senate votes yay or nay on the academic calendar and the proposed changes to days off for students, who would vote on the proposed days for staff?
I think it's probably David and Mary. I mean, it's definitely an HR issue for sure. And pay, holidays, budget.
I would think the board is. The board would have to vote for that if you had to say yes.
We
actually know the amount of money that they would cost us.
Well, we know there's two numbers out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a difference of opinion on what it would cost.
$150,000. And what it would cost in restfulness and having employees that come back very energized and thinking clearer.
Well,
okay. So here's since there's been more discussion, how about this, just in an effort to move us forward. Mm-hmm. We write and say, in the absence of this stuff for staff, the employee assembly does not feel that they can support or not support the academic calendar?
Yeah, it's kind of moot. Like, why do we need it? Why do we need it?
You know what I'd like to do, though? I think whatever resolution we put out there, that we should thank the original committee for bringing up the point to begin
mm-hmm.
with. I think
yeah.
we should thank them because I think that was very community-minded and mm-hmm. focused, and I think that should be in whatever resolution we put forward.
But to add to that, I don't think the implementation was done very well. I mean, yes, you can start with an academic need to change the calendar, which I'm just going to say is the university's calendar. But any change to one side of the balance, you know, we may have a three-way balance here. One change to one section is going to affect all the others.
Sure.
So staff, faculty, students should have all been on the table.
They were.
Leslie was our representative there.
Okay.
Among other, Jeff Doyle and...
All your fault.
So guys, to move this on, we have a very full agenda.
Is the word you're looking for abstain?
Do we want to abstain from any support or non-support of the academic calendar?
Okay.
All in favor?
It's not in our proof.
Any opposed? Any opposed?
One.
Leslie.
Okay.
Okay.
And we've already put forth that we will draft a new resolution
to
support a staff holiday.
Okay.
Yay! Good job, Liz.
You want that still in the forefront when you say I abstained in two.
Right. Yeah.
Leslie, do you want me to write up something for you?
If you want.
Okay. Staff education expiration day, just that is on the horizon. It happens in July. Last year we staffed the table at it. I wasn't there, but did we feel that was worth our time?
No.
Can we have a table for the education committee?
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, if EA doesn't want to have a table, we could be like education committee of the EA.
Mm-hmm.
So we could do both the jobs, but focus on education.
Mm-hmm.
It was not well attended at all.
No.
The event or the whole event.
I don't think it was either.
Yeah, it was a waste. It was not a good one. Okay. Moving right along, Employee Volunteer Extravaganza, May 18th, which is a week from Friday, noon to 1 at G10 Biotech. This is the thing that the Cornell Recreation Connection came to us and talked about, this volunteer thing that they wanted to do. So they're going to have presentation points on how to join a committee, become a volunteer, what the CRC does. But they're also going to allow each group that's there to represent volunteer opportunities to have a few minutes to present, you know, about the organization. So I'll put forward something. Can we get some folks to staff the tables from 12 to 1 on the 18th in G10 Biotech?
And what would we be?
So we could talk about the employee assembly. Mm-hmm. And it's committees, get them signed up for committees or to get them involved, that sort of thing.
It's Friday,
May 18th.
Before closing, unfortunately,
right.
I can't help out.
So I'll send out an email and see if we can get at least one or two people there to do something. So.
Do you have the date for the CD event?
I think it's July 21st. But I'll email it to you guys. I don't have that off the top of my head. Okay. We have a new EA. Let's see. We have Bill and Curtis, who have been reelected. Our new members will be Thomas Mitchell, Eric Lee, Michelle Stefanski Seymour. I got it right. Okay. Al Capagrossi, Bill Smith, Joe Ambrosetti, and Bob Blanco. So those are our new EA members. And we have a newly elected trustee to replace Beth, which is Alan Nittman. So Alan will be joining us. We also have, we need to elect new UA members for next year's term. I know Bridget is currently seated and has expressed interest in renewing her term. Were you interested in want to reserve that?
Yeah.
Okay. Ned LaSalle is also interested in being reappointed. He's been a rep for us for the past 3 years or 2 years. Might be 2 years.
Yeah.
2 years on the UA. Mm-hmm. So both of them are interested in renewing to the UA. Do we see any problems with renewing their terms for next year?
Do you have more candidates than you have spots?
Not at the moment. I've got one more spot. I have to talk to Greg as well. But I already said preference goes to those.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm holding off. We have one other person who's expressed interest, but I want to wait to hear back from you before we move forward with that one. So, anyone not support Ned or Bridget? Bridget, don't work. Okay, great. So we'll reappoint Ned and Bridget to the UA. And then we have one other seat open, and we've got one definite interest, and we can talk later and see that. Okay, next report from the chair. So a couple different things. We met with Mary, and she talked about the survey results, and they've moved forward with the team, and Beth actually gave us the name of this HR team. They are calling it REST, Response to the Employee Survey Team. And there are four initiatives that they're focusing on, which is what we've talked about already: career choice, staff recognition, supervisor feedback, and workload. They're going to be looking for folks from the EA to participate in those teams. So David, Mary suggested that you participate on supervisor feedback.
Yeah.
So I'll add you to that one once we...
What was that for us?
Career choices, staff recognition, supervisor feedback, and workload. So those are...
Can I ask our newly elected members? So when she mentioned Mary, you guys know what she's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
So it's okay. I won't be here to be the nudge.
Okay.
New people come on. Just avoid the afternoon.
Is there someone willing to take over to be the old curmudgeon for Gary Stewart? That's an executive committee.
Like curmudgeon and straight.
Okay. Great.
Somebody volunteered.
Excellent.
How do we sign up for those committees?
I don't know who the leads are for all of them yet, so I.
For your guys.
Yes. So just to get back, so one of the things that Mary really kind of focused on with us was the workload piece, and you know, the fact that it's not just an overwork issue, it's also an underwork issue, it's also a training issue, and not really sure how to really kind of harness all that together in a very easy and nice package. And Beth actually put forward a suggestion that this may be something that the EA can take on in a small but powerful way, in that rather than looking at it from the top down, as in, you know, what should supervisors be doing, for the EA to look at ways to empower staff to ask questions, to be able to say to their supervisor, you know, maybe put together, she suggests, like a campaign where we'd have a flow chart that would say, you know, it's okay to ask questions. If you don't feel, you know, first go with your supervisor with work questions or ideas. If you don't feel comfortable, talk with your HR rep. If that doesn't work, talk with this person. So just to kind of empower them that it's okay for them to be the catalyst to have conversations about what's working, what's not working, rather than for them to sit and wait for leadership to approach them. Chris.
I kind of find that kind of problem. So I tried this. No, and I mean, I think I had a little bit of that, but I really did. I was like, so, okay, I want to go talk to my supervisor. And my supervisor was like, I don't know, go talk to HR. So I went to go talk to HR. And HR was like, I don't know, go talk to your supervisor. And then I was just like back and forth, like talking to the same two people. And then.
So Mary wants to hear those stories.
Right, and she wants to hear recommendations on how can we move forward and help facilitate change.
She said that she's gotten a lot of feedback in the survey, you know, all the comments that she read, but she has more questions to those. And your example right there is the perfect one that she's hearing. You know, the issue that Kathy brought up at the last meeting about, you know, jobs being reclassed and being pushed back, saying we can't do it. She wants to hear those things so that she can figure out why that's going on.
But you can't report that. I mean, maybe I'm thinking of this institution and the top-down pyramid structure. But like, if I went to go talk to my HR, I would not feel comfortable going to talk to Mary about that. And then I definitely don't think that my boss will feel comfortable.
Well, so this is what I would say to you. See, this is how to put the past staff in the power position. So your supervisor tells you to go to HR. When HR tells you to go to your supervisor, you need to say to HR, my supervisor told me to come to you. You're the next step. If you can't answer it, I need to know who the next person for me to go to is. Who do I talk to? If the supervisor can't make a decision and they've sent me to you and you can't make a decision, who's the person who I go to next to make a decision? It may not be Mary. It may be someone else, but you have to keep moving up the chain. And eventually, right, it could be the ombudsman, and it could be Mary. I mean, it could go to Mary's office. It could be someone in, you know, depending on the questions. It could be benefits. It could be whomever. But
I think that's a lot of privilege to get in that kind of comfortable position that has those kind of, when you look at our power privilege dynamic, and I just think creating a campaign would be more of a flop. Because I think like one of the nice things, I feel like I have a rapport with my supervisor to go at X, whatever question there might be, but I think there's a lot more people who do not feel like they have that level of privilege. Or even, you know, that the supervisor will not respond kindly to those kind of things. And so I think that this is just a feel free to ask question kind of campaign. I don't think it's the reality of the culture, and I think that's too much responsibility on the bottom, where we really need to be educating people that are in positions of influence to allow for collective feedback or conversations, which I'm not doing. We're just going over.
I think part of the problem with that is that the people who are sitting here, they don't necessarily know the work that the person here is doing. They don't know the work. They're not focused on it, and you know, in some cases they don't want to deal with it. And so we've got this employee sitting here feeling very frustrated. We have a supervisor who can't assess the work or doesn't know how to assess the work, and you know, yeah, we can try to educate these people up here, but we should also be trying to educate the people down here. And I think Mary has to educate them up here, and we've got to educate them down here to stand up for themselves.
And then it comes
to, the middle. And, I mean, Beth put the idea forward to Mary, and she thought it was a good start. And, Beth, please chime in.
Mary never liked anything. what Mary suggested was that we work with Chris Halliday and Rick Prehart, who are in charge of the rest results of the employee service team,
right?
To brainstorm with them some possibilities around the idea of empowering the employees, because we, the employees, have been so stuck, and we said over and over, and you know how afraid we all are to ask those questions, because we've asked 2 years ago, we didn't get the answer we wanted, and so we said, I'm not going to ask again. Whether it's about workload, too much work, too little work, and the workload issues are different for every individual. It's not the same workload issue. And so the idea was to empower people just a little bit. Just a little bit. And maybe whatever you think we said today isn't what it we really mean. You know, maybe hearing, getting feedback from Chris and Rick would help it form into something, just a small step from the bottom up that people can do to feel just a little bit more empowered. Like, it's okay even to ask your HR person a question. Some people don't even know who their HR person is.
I agree with that, because I think if it was framed right and the messaging was really clear, that it's a good thing. And I don't want to compare this stuff with notice and response, but I thought notice and response was really effective, and I felt empowered by that. And I've seen a couple students that just like really beleaguered in the last few months. And if it wasn't for notice and response, I would not have had the guts to go up and say to them, are you okay? And, you know, I thought, similarly, if you reiterate the message, you know, and then, of course, like Curtis said, the supervisors have to buy into it.
Well, I guess what I'm thinking of, like, I like your idea of you should know who your HR rep is. I just think, and maybe I'm taking too much of a social justice approach to this, shouldn't that be then the responsibility of the HR reps to send emails out welcoming and identifying themselves, not the job of you? I mean, I guess it's the power dynamic. It should be the other way. They should be opening and making themselves, because what the engagement survey, at least how I interpreted the data, was saying was we don't feel comfortable. We kind of know who they are, but we do not feel comfortable going up to the top and giving feedback. At least that's how I interpreted that data. And so I think it's the people on the top, their responsibility to say, hey, people on the bottom, you're allowed to talk to us. Not us on the bottom telling people on the bottom, we can go talk to people on the top. Because
well,
I'm not hearing any message different from the people on the top.
Just a quick idea on that thought. If somebody might, as a singular person, might not want to go and approach their HR person or make an appointment or take time out from their work to make an appointment or whatever, but maybe the HR people could have little brown bag lunches or something. Like every couple months or something, and just say, I'm here to answer your questions, and we're going to sit around and talk, and then, you know, maybe issues will come out of that.
The response to the employee survey is going to individual colleges right now. They're having big meetings. Like, we just had a big free meeting at the veterinary college, and one of the things that's coming out is forming college employee assemblies, not university employees assemblies, so that there's a group of people to represent the little guys to the top and get their concerns
better. So, Curtis, I want to pick up on your social justice thing. And please notice that curmudgeon begins with the CD letter. So I think this is good. I don't want to like misuse this phrase, because it's a very special phrase. But, you know, the whole thing about speak truth to power. So I think that it is the responsibility of the folks at the lower end of the thing to feed it up. We have to have the courage to say this isn't right. Here's what we'd like to see happen.
And Mary acknowledged, without really saying it, that this health is dysfunctional, and that it's a systemic problem, and you can't just, voila, fix a systemic problem. So she's working very hard at that upper level to try and figure out how to do this.
And if some pressure starts coming from the bottom, hopefully we'll compress in the middle and create some change. David?
I can't help but sit here and think that, like, we're talking about staff empowerment and people feeling like it's okay to say things or express themselves. And I don't know, I I think that's the whole idea behind my idea last week about making every staff member a general member of the employee assembly. It is staff. And it is solidarity, and it is bringing us all together. It's like every single one of us, at least from the get-go, you are a general member, so you have direct ties to this group and the executive committee, and Mary and Dave.
I don't know,
at the very least, it raises awareness of the assembly and of staff rights, then mission accomplished, you know?
Well, we were asked to meet with David, or Chris, and Rick.
Right.
Anyway, so if we had that meeting, or anybody who wants to come,
they could
come here. We can talk about it further because they are their own HR made committee, and they are tasked with dealing with the results of the survey as well.
Right, and we're also getting just to kind of sidebar off that, we're also starting to get some stuff from the heads of the other task force. Like I just got something from Kathy Berkren, who is organizing the whole response to the career development piece, or the career choices, whatever it was called, piece of it. And they've given me, I've got to forward along to the full EA, but they want to meet with us and talk about the series of questions that they have. They're going to do a university-wide needs assessment of career development and training, which is huge.
Okay.
And you know, they're bringing us in on the ground level on this, which I think is great. So there's a lot of these things coming forward, and the EA is going to really be asked to be involved. And I think that this is a way that we can really kind of rise the spotlight on the EA and make people more aware of us. And, you know, I mean, I don't know, Linda, I don't know if you have any thoughts about this, you know, supporting, getting people from the bottom up to kind of, I mean, you're in the HR world. And
well, I mean, I think right now the number one stressor listed on the survey was financial, and I think there's still a lot of people who are afraid to say anything because they're afraid of losing their jobs still. And I think that's the reality, and until people can become a little bit more comfortable, I think there's a lot of people who will not open their mouths and they'll just take it because they need a job.
Is there, just out of curiosity, you know, David Skorton puts out that email every year about that ethics hotline. Is there something in that? I mean, I know it's not, you know, a lot of these issues aren't ethical issues, but is there some sort of idea that we can move forward for a hotline where someone could pick up the phone and call and not have to say who they are and say, this is the issue I have? I mean, I know there's the ombudsman's office, but a lot of people feel...
I was just going to say that I know there's a faculty and staff assistance program that's open to staff. I think they get, like, 3 counseling a year. And I think they have a lot of good stuff about how to approach your bosses. And if you don't want to approach your boss, you still have somebody that you can vent to and get feedback from, bounce ideas off of. So I always feel like there's not a lot of people who have even heard of it.
Right. And I know they've got a new lead, right? Gabriel?
Yeah, Gabriel.
Yeah, we only have one meeting left.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we actually talked about it in our meeting with Mary, and so he's on that list of people that we have to get in here as well.
I do think if we're trying to encourage employees to have more of a voice, we should let them know that's just one piece of it, that we're also working on senior management and education and all of that, too, so that they know we're not saying, you know, you come up with a solution, we're all going to, multiple levels, we're kind of together.
So do people in general think that this is something that we might want to consider looking at further, kind of best suggestion, maybe putting something around that to see if we can move something forward?
Yes.
Curtis, would you support at least looking further at it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'm just checking. You were looking down. I wasn't sure. I just wanted to double check. Okay.
You should,
since you've okay. Leadership breakfast. So we had leadership breakfast last week. Annette joined us and talked about their kind of push to the need of a new building. They can't fit anyone else in there. They talked a little bit about use of their services and that it is open for care for staff as well, which...
There was a lot of discussion, too, about the copay that the university started, what, in 19...
90s. They do for like immediate care. Like if you needed to go down to Gannett, you couldn't get into your regular doctor. You could go to Gannett.
No, I called them and said I'm not feeling well, and they said we don't support staff.
They do for work injuries.
No, that was a different.
No, this was just like I need an antibiotic.
They made that clear that was the service that they provided.
They did provide some very important information about the copay, and there was discussion about that because they did obviously see a decrease in people
using the services
because of the copay, and some talk about maybe some other options.
What is the copay?
$10
For students too.
For students, yeah, but it's a $10 copay, and yes, it is fairly low, and they try to keep it low. One of the issues that they found is that students on the lower end of the income scale are tending not to seek medical attention as much as they should because of the copay. So there was some talk about, you know, Jim Blair threw out some ideas about trying to get, you know, foundation to cover those costs and this and that. There was also some discussion about the cost of ambulance service if you had to go to the hospital. And they talked about, you know, an all-night clinic, and they said that that's something they did away with years ago because it was cost prohibitive.
Do they have the same copay for CAPS, or is it just for the medical?
CAPS,
I think.
Yeah, I think CAPS.
Yeah, I think it's quite certain
free.
Funded.
I'm so surprised because I had the same experience that Leslie had. I always turned down at Gannett, except for if there was a fall at the workplace.
I'm going to email and ask about that because
when you get your office, call them up and say I have a bad cold. Can I come in for an
appointment? What was specifically said was that staff members cannot
get into their regular doctor.
They never even asked me that. They just said we don't want to afford.
Yeah, because someone who was at the breakfast said they had just been to Gannett.
Yeah.
That's how that piece of conversation came around.
I had a reaction from the food shop that they gave me, and I went over and said something to them, and their response was, go to the ER.
Really?
I couldn't breathe. Go to the ER.
Well,
then you should call 911 and go to the ER. They can't treat you for anything.
Yeah, they can't.
But no, I've been there before when I had an allergic reaction, and they took care of it.
Right.
This
is very interesting because all of this may be some of what they're dealing with is that they basically have renovated closets and stuck, offices and closets, and they're just bursting at the seams. So they are.
Yeah. I will ask about that question because they came up in the conversation.
I like the EA undercover idea too. just call yourself.
I will call myself and make it same answer. I'm still going to contact her.
They do support staff for travel medicine though.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the one other thing I had under there is the folks from Communications for Human Resources and Safety Services would like to come to our next EA meeting for 10 minutes to talk about the new look of the Work-Life Digest. A new design, and they've got some questions for us, and these are another set of questions that I could forward along, just about the new newsletter, how it's broken out, what do we think of it, that sort of thing. So I'll send forward the questions for folks to think about. So we've got two sets of questions for us to think about for the future for these groups. All right, moving right along, committee reports, campus welfare, Leslie.
Very briefly, we're just working on two resolutions, one endorsing the Office of Workforce Diversity and Inclusion for its work with bias response initiatives, sandwich generation initiatives, and the child care center.
And if you do that, then you have to acknowledge everybody. I will add to that later.
Okay. I felt like I came in behind the eight ball in the resolution to really understand what the hell they were talking about. But anyway, we didn't resolve it, so... and the other resolution was in regards to course evaluation accessibility. They're putting a push on them to make course evaluations accessible online across the campus, which is pretty interesting. So that was not resolved either. That's
it. Can I ask some questions about the survey? It seems like we're getting a lot of response back from people who are very upset that they've been reminded so many times.
All right, but we're not talking about the survey.
Oh, I thought we were talking
about the survey. No, we're talking about the campus welfare
committee. Oh, sorry.
I just was like, oh, all right.
Does anyone have any
talk about the survey now?
Comments, questions about the?
No.
Can we skip the UA update? Since you transitioned into the EA survey.
Add just one thing, because I'm afraid we're going to run out of time, and it was something that was brought to the EA, which was the parking at East Del Paso.
Sure.
And one of the things that was said was that they had an update from parking, and they are going ahead and phasing in the perimeter rates for the folks at East Hill Plaza over a four-year period, although the first year has already passed because they had this notice last
yes.
year. So that was one piece I wanted to add.
Okay. I mean, you can talk about the rest. I was just gonna
nope,
do that before
nope,
the other
nope.
thing.
Okay.
Survey?
Sorry.
For those of you who don't know, the survey came out under the EA's email, so Bridget and I and Amy, I guess, got every timely responder for every employee at the university. Every single one out. And a couple cranky people.
So the employees were still in the process of sending out or looking for responses for the employee survey, for the employee assembly. For the employee assembly survey. So I'm looking for those of you who don't know, we're looking for a response back on just general awareness of the EA and the how we communicate with people and how well we're doing for that. So the fourth reminder went out on April 27th, and we did send the survey out to 7,862 emails. So, when I printed this out yesterday, I think we had gotten 3,862 responses for a response rate of about 47%.
2,500 of them under duress to stop getting emails.
So my apologies. I really thought the survey was only going out three times, and then Tanya called me and said, "What the heck?" And I said, "I'm sorry. That was fine. I dropped the ball." I would have told her not to send it out of course.
It just went out coincidentally along with the EAE news and the please vote for the EAE. So
yeah, and then people got, even if you've already voted, we still got reminders to vote. So I don't know. They were getting a lot of things from the employee assembly.
Well, they know who we are.
They know who we are. Yeah.
Communication's working.
And so I do have to say just a couple of the problems. That I don't know if the list was not current, and I know it wasn't your list. Whoever pulled together the list, we had some employees who were no longer employees who got stuff, so they were a little unhappy about that kind of thing. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't know.
Good job. 47% is good.
Yeah. I need some work with the list, maybe. I don't know. I got it from HR. So.
Yeah. And we don't have any results yet, right? Well,
no results. We're giving people until Thursday, and then they'll start tabulating.
Okay. Cool. Thank you. Under new business, kudos notification. So, another Beth brainstorm. She had a lot of good ideas this month. So we talked a little bit about the kudos and the fact that, you know, people submit kudos and they often come in like right after the EAE news goes out, and then there's, you know, a period of time before the next kudos come, you know, the EAE news comes out. So we thought in between it being posted to the whole campus community that the EA could send out a certificate and a letter, you know, and it would be pretty much a form letter and a stock certificate that we would, you know, change the name and whatnot on. But that we would send out, like, as soon as we get a kudos in, so that the person who's getting kudos will actually have something, and then there'll be kind of the bigger public announcement when the EAE news comes out. And we thought perhaps we could have the staff recognitions and awards committee kind of spearhead the work behind getting those out kind of thing.
And the point is, it's working, because the people who are getting kudos are thrilled. They're just thrilled. Whether or not they read it when they get the EA newsletter is
another thing, right.
But I'm also, I got a phone call, and I think Tony did too, from people who now want to give more kudos because they read about the kudos.
Good.
So it's good.
Okay.
People want to be acknowledged.
Yeah, so we've been getting a steady stream in of different kudos, which is really nice. And so there's just this idea of some other acknowledgement. So I don't know if anybody had any other thoughts beyond that.
Yeah, they all get free lunch, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So cool. The more kudos you have, the more expensive it's going to be.
Yeah, this could turn into a pizza lunch.
Well, it could turn into a cocktail party. It doesn't have to be lunch. We could change it to a kudos celebration event.
At the chapter.
At the chapter. Yeah, so everybody came at once.
Oh, just hold on campus. That's right. So did we do the doodle poll on the
Yeah, and I haven't gotten back from everybody. And just on the kudos lunch, I sent out a thing for a doodle poll. If you haven't responded, please do so that we can pick a date.
Are we looking at these dates in May?
That's right around the corner. So
we need to let people know about.
Yes, I know.
So if you turn, I say if you don't get your doodle poll in by the end of the day today.
Okay, if you don't, Leslie.
Come on, we gotta invite people. There's a lot of work to do.
Okay,
that's right.
So I'm like,
who is for you?
Okay, kudos to you. Someone kudos us more.
People, it's a doodle poll.
All right.
20 seconds.
So respond to the doodle poll, please. Or I'm going to send Leslie to your office.
Oh, I think you guys need the doodle poll. Should
they?
Or are they not?
Yes. I could send the doodle poll, yes. I have not, because officially they don't. They're termed as a star, but we can include them in our...
And did we finalize the... it's off topic, but did we finalize this of the trip to Geneva? And do we... What needs to happen?
Now that we have new EA members, we will ask them. So that was what we were waiting for, so we had our new EA members. Okay.
Poor Diane.
Education committee survey results. Go, Lavanya.
Okay. So I have the results for the education committee survey. This was sent for survey population 2008 to 2011. Cornell EDP program as well as non-Cornell graduates, I mean employees. We had a 71% response rate, survey completion rate. So I sent out 52 emails, 52 surveys, some of which bounced back, but 37 of the surveys were completed. And we got overwhelming response, overwhelming feedback that I did not expect. A lot of people open for communication. They spelled it out very candidly, what their problems were, what their suggestions were. So three areas, focus areas. One was flexibility to take classes and to finish the degree. Supervisory support, and the unfortunate tax implications. So one of the employees was like, he or she had to spend $20,000 apart from undergrad loans just to finish up the EDP program, and they wanted a more explicit medium so that people who are jumping into EDP program would know that this is not without tax implications and this is not in any way a free thing, even though it's a benefit.
Right.
EDP employee degree program.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank
you are second in command after...
I mean, I understand their concern, but they got a Cornell undergraduate or graduate degree for $20,000. I mean...
That's right. So I think...
That's a benefit, I think.
What I'd be curious to see, and maybe the Education Committee can talk with, the... Because there are classes on, so you want to get a Cornell undergraduate or you want to get a Cornell graduate degree. What information are they sharing in that, and are they talking about the tax implication piece?
They certainly do. I've been to those classes, and they talk about it.
They do.
But what it means in dollars.
About tax implications, but what that employee was mentioning was they are not aware of how much it would cost for a four-year degree when they do it through EDP, because they are having a cut in each of their paychecks, and it's coming out. So he was basically saying, is there a way to communicate better so that people are aware before
give them a dollar amount idea.
You
can expect it to cost you somewhere in the neighborhood of $20,000 to $30,000 to do it this way, but the full cost is this, because I think that's an important piece there too.
Well, it's also like, you know, I don't know. I think about it as, you know, you have a certain personal responsibility find out how much things are going to cost. You don't go buy a new car. You don't know what the car payment is going to be.
But,
you know?
But that's what I'm
looking at. And is it different for Cornell schools as opposed to the state schools on campus?
Yes.
Because tuition is different.
But benefits does not give you a dollar amount, even if you ask them specifically.
But they know what the percentage is. They're going to... They know what the percentage of your tax.
So unless you get your first paycheck where the current cut is, you won't know explicitly how much you're going
to
lose.
Well, you should be able to know that a Cornell credit is X dollars for a Cornell credit. And be able to say if it's 30% of that Cornell credit or whatever it is, that's...
So it seems like there should be a way to be able to...
They should be able to give them a formula.
Yeah. And other opinions elicited were that this should be treated as a benefit and not as something that can be denied, because some of the things were staff should have equal opportunity to pursue a degree. Decisions are based on supervisor's personal attitude rather than performance and benefits as outlined by the university.
So that gets back to the supervisory review component. David, you writing this down? but I think, you know, I think the thing that any supervisor needs to, I mean, I hear the performance piece, but if you're, say, the receptionist and your job is to have FaceTime because you have to be there to answer the phone, you could be doing a great performance that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to allow you to not
exactly.
be doing your job
but
and take
you
a class. You should be able to within reason, but you know, I mean, you have to take into, I mean, this is the thing that Paul Burstig has said, this is the thing that Mary said, it, you know, some jobs are just easier to be able to break away from, where other jobs you got to have that FaceTime. Unfortunately, I mean, it's an unfortunate piece.
Can you tell to the supervisor whether they give you release time in your
right.
days, or if you do it all on your own at night?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so when we met yesterday with the education committee, met, and some of the brainstorming ideas were like, I would contact benefits to know if any of the candidates who were enrolled in the education program dropped, so that we could contact them for feedback. And a bunch of the survey respondents provided their email addresses voluntarily so that future applicants could contact them. We were talking about a listserv to share info. These were just some of the ideas. Affinity group for employees taking classes, or EDP, just to say that they are not alone. And the education committee is stable at seed. One of the respondents had used EDP program to finish his or her undergrad program for 10 years and a master's program within 4 years. So Kathy had this idea that we do not, it's an anonymous survey, so we don't know who it is, but one of those candidates would be ideal for a Cornell Cast video so that you could spread awareness about Ed benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that is something I'll work
yeah.
on.
There may be something we can get out of this too about a resolution or something about things being more equitable. I mean, I have the same feeling about the wellness program.
Right.
You know, some people are allowed to do wellness, some people aren't. Some people can do wellness without paying it back, some people can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
more
it really does. I mean, it can office to office, not even from college to
right.
college. You know, and the people, it's very frustrating for people, I think, mm-hmm. to see somebody who's allowed in the next office allowed to do wellness and they can't, and
right.
their jobs are similar. So, you know, I think there's
people who need to do survey.
Yeah.
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 Some sort
survey.
Of
people
yeah.
in that
yeah.
way. Yeah.
I'll be emailing out the survey results to everybody.
Great. Oh, thank you.
All right. Really quickly, Gemma, Beth, on the care fund?
Yeah, I can do it in 2 minutes or less.
Okay.
The care fund is the coordinating and responding to employees. And we use up all our money. And thankfully, human resources funded us so that our balance was zero. They didn't fund us back for all of the flood for the flood applicants.
Which we originally thought we weren't that they were going to cover that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah
I thought
we
they were, did. Yeah, but they didn't.
I'm confident that if you really beg them, they could give us more money. However, we're depleted and we still have applications coming in several per month from people who have the most amazingly unbelievable crises. And we're giving them money. And now that I know I can run a negative balance, then we meet with the CARE Fund Committee and the CARE Fund Fundraising Committee. Jenna's on the fund, well, both committees. And so there will be some fundraising things happening. And with that, apropos to about a year ago, Gary, I don't know if it was you or not, but there was a student group who we were going to tap into, and the student group needed a year.
Oh, yeah, that was you, the event planning group at the high school.
Oh, was that you?
Yes, it was Curtis. Yeah.
So when almost a year has gone by, we'd love to give them the heads up that we would love to partner with them maybe in the fall.
Okay.
And there's no way we can, the EA can contribute to that fund, right? You can't transfer money that way, right?
No.
Care Fund 5K? Seriously, Care Fund 5K, right here on campus.
I'll
hand out water.
I'll help with that.
It's fairly inexpensive
event.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty easy to run, yeah.
That would raise awareness.
All right. EA 5K. Get on that. Gemma, mm-hmm. Leslie, Chair, all that. Okay, great. We're good. Done. All right. Anything else for today? Anything else for today? No? All right. I'll email you guys. It's just we're gonna have an EA meeting in Geneva if you're available for a day. All right. Thank you.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.